This is Radio Equal Shock with your host, Alex Smith.
I'm not easily scared by science, but the work of our guest Keith Moore and his colleagues paints a possibility of outright extinction-level catastrophe for ocean life and all life if we continue heating the planet. I don't know how we all missed this. Keith Moore is Associate Professor of Earth System Science at the University of California, Irvine. After his doctorate in oceanography, Moore specialized in a new field called ocean biogeochemistry. In 2018, Moore led a foundational study called Sustained Climate Warming Drives Declining Marine Biological Productivity. Now he is back as co-author of Reduced CO2 Uptake and Growing Nutrient Sequestration from Slowing Overturning Circulation. Does that sound complicated? Does it sound boring? How about a quadrupling of CO2 in the atmosphere by 2250, a possible shortage of oxygen to breathe, and a mass die-off of sea life, including food fisheries, all lasting 1,000 years or more? Does that sound important? From University of California, Irvine, Keith Moore, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex. Great to be here.
Keith, what is biogeochemistry?
So biogeochemistry just refers to the cycling of key elements like carbon and nitrogen and phosphorus through the Earth system, through the land, ocean, and atmosphere. And carbon is particularly important because carbon dioxide is such an important greenhouse gas. And so much of what I study is the controls on the exchange of carbon dioxide between the atmosphere and the ocean, because that can have a big impact on the atmospheric concentrations and so on the climate.
Yes, we get whatever the sea serves up. Is that how it works?
The ocean becomes dominant in the long run on the atmospheric CO2. And the CO2 we're putting into the atmosphere right now, every year, 25 to 30% of what we're emitting from our cars and our factories is being taken up by the oceans. If the oceans weren't taking up that CO2, global warming would be proceeding at an even faster pace.
Well, it's interesting. Did you just say 25%? Because we're told that about 90% of Earth's, I guess that's energy, is taken up by the ocean, not just carbon dioxide, but the total energy.
You're right, Alex. That's the heat. So the heat that's been added to the system, a lot of that has also been taken up by the oceans, or the atmosphere would be heating up much more quickly.
So from your dissertation up to the present, you've studied life in the Southern Ocean. What are the boundaries of the Southern Ocean, and why should we learn more about it?
So the Southern Ocean is the ocean that extends all the way around Antarctica, and it's important for biogeochemistry because it's one of the main connections that, it links the Atlantic Ocean, the Pacific Ocean, and the Indian Ocean, and it's also where a lot of the exchange between the surface and the deep ocean happens, in that Southern Ocean around Antarctica.
The late Melvin Stern said at Woods Hole, it's easy to see how convection gets water down into the interior of the ocean. The challenge is figuring out where and how that water gets back to the surface. Your thoughts?
That's pretty accurate. We do know, the deepest waters form in the polar regions where they become very dense and denser than the water below. So those dense waters then sink. And the dense waters forming around Antarctica become so dense that they sink all the way to the bottom of the ocean to form what's called Antarctic bottom water that then slowly moves, northward away from Antarctica along the bottom of the ocean. And much of that return, we now know that return flow to the surface also happens in the Southern Ocean, but not right on the continent, but farther north at sort of mid-latitudes, around 60, 55 degrees south or so, where we have this strong upwelling where the circulation brings deep water from thousands of meters down all the way up to the surface. And then that once at the surface, those nutrients, some of them are used locally to support life in the Southern Ocean, but a lot of those nutrients today are not used locally, but they slowly drift northwards and end up supporting the life at the lower latitudes throughout the global ocean.
And many of our climate hawks know about the ocean system called the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, or AMOC, and people in North America call it the Gulf Stream, and it warms eastern North America, the UK, and Europe. A number of recent studies show the flow of these waters is weakening, but please tell us about the southern counterpart to AMOC.
Sure. And so in our study, we studied both AMOC and what's called SMOC, the Southern Meridional Overturning Circulation. And so this is the one that begins near Antarctica with that dense water forming. It forms the Antarctic bottom water, which sinks down and then moves northward into the Pacific, the Atlantic, and the Indian Ocean. So as whereas the AMOC circulation is only happening in the Atlantic basin, this deeper circulation is happening in all three basins globally. And what we found in the study is that both AMOC and SMOC are slowing down with global warming when we look out ahead with our climate models.
And it's fascinating to learn. I mean, you did a lot of work on plankton, and it's fascinating to learn that carbon-grabbing plankton can regulate their own depth, and they need to find a place with enough nutrients and enough light. What happens to that essential sweet spot as humans force more warming into the ocean?
Right. Well, all life needs nutrients to survive, right? Key nutrients like nitrogen, phosphorus, iron can be a very important growth-limiting nutrient in the oceans. And what happens with the deep circulation, so everywhere in the ocean today, there's some dead and dying organisms that are sinking down from the surface waters where the photosynthesis occurs, where there's enough sunlight for photosynthesis, and most of the life in the oceans is near the surface because of that. But a fraction of that organic matter produced sinks as dead and dying organisms, and those slowly decompose as they're sinking. And so as they decompose, they're releasing the carbon and the nitrogen and the phosphorus in the deeper ocean. So if that, you can imagine if that process just continued, eventually they would use up all of the nutrients in the surface ocean and we'd be in real trouble. But that doesn't happen today because the circulation, this deep overturning circulation, brings those nutrients that the biology has pumped down into the deeper ocean back to the surface. And that sort of keeps the whole system going.
In 2016, we had the Russian plankton expert Sergei Petrovsky on Radio EcoShock. His paper said the future of plankton under global warming is unknown, and that echoes a 2015 paper by Lofcotter and Gruber. Have scientists sorted that out now? Do you think plankton will thrive or decline as warming continues?
Well, what our study shows is that as the circulation slows down, you're slowing down this return flow of the nutrients back to the surface. And so over time, over decades to the next couple of hundred years, as the circulation slows more and more, you know, you still have nutrients, you still have organisms sinking down, releasing the nutrients, but now the circulation isn't bringing them up. So the nutrients start to build up at depth, and you start to get less nutrients at the surface. And so that will lead to declining photosynthesis and biological production. And eventually that will work, you know, that will work its way up the food chain to less fish for us to catch, for example.
From your work, as the warming continues, ocean life around Antarctica will thrive, but the tropics and the North Atlantic suffer catastrophic loss of nutrients. Is that the picture?
That is correct. And in the North Atlantic, it's partly tied to this AMOC overturning circulation and the fact that it's almost shutting down with strong global warming. It reduces by about more than 80% for AMOC. That means that return flow of nutrients to the surface is also reduced. And also the deep mixing that drives a lot of the biology in the North Atlantic declines. So in our earlier study, we estimated that, you know, this great slowdown of AMOC could reduce the potential fish catch in the high-latitude North Atlantic by 50% or more. So, you know, it doesn't go to zero. We're not losing all the fish, but we're losing a lot of the productivity. And that North Atlantic fisheries has been, you know, historically was very important for the development of both the U.S., Canada, and Europe.
What is the role of wind in changing the ocean in a warming world?
Well, the wind, one of the key things the wind does, it affects that upwelling of nutrients, that return flow to the surface in the Southern Ocean. And in the earlier study you mentioned, we found that the winds actually got more favorable. So there was stronger upwelling, and the upwelling also moved closer to Antarctica, which meant there was more iron, a key nutrient, available, because iron is coming off of the continents, out of the rocks. And so when the upwelling moves closer to Antarctica, you have more iron, and then you get more biological, more phytoplankton growth and more photosynthesis then right close to Antarctica. And what happens is, you know, they're using those nutrients locally, so those nutrients, less of the nutrients flow north to then support the rest of the global ecosystem.
I came across a 2017 paper in Science Advances. It was titled, Overlooked Possibility of a Collapsed Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation in a Warming Climate. And the authors say that the AMOC collapses 300 years after the atmospheric CO2 concentration is abruptly doubled from the 1990 level. It sounds like we could be committing to colder winters in New England and the UK even as the rest of the world warms. Is that even possible?
It's possible, but more likely what would happen in the long run is those areas just won't warm as much as the rest of the world. They won't actually get cooler than they are now, but the cooling will be slowed there because you won't be bringing heat north in the ocean and then releasing it to the atmosphere, which has a big warming effect on Europe today.
This is a climate emergency. Find out more on the blog, ecoshock.org. No sign up, just the latest info, free for all. Ecoshock.org.
This is EcoShock. Our guest is oceanographer Keith Moore. You co-authored several papers on the relationships between iron and plankton. We think adding iron to the sea can stimulate enough plankton. Maybe it would help capture carbon. Some call it geoengineering, others ocean farming. Should we be doing this?
That's a tricky question. You can stimulate growth in a lot of areas, but as I mentioned, only a fraction of that new growth is going to sink into the deeper ocean. And that is what removes the carbon from contact with the atmosphere. Most of that new growth will actually decompose in the surface waters or near the surface waters. So you won't really be storing that carbon long term away from the atmosphere. It might get back to the atmosphere the next year or a few years later. It's only the stuff that makes it to the deep ocean that is really sequestered. And that is one of the options we're looking at as we sort of become more desperate about trying to reduce the growth rate of CO2 in the atmosphere. And one way to do that is to encourage ocean uptake. And this is starting to become a big research area, and a lot of the funding agencies are starting to put money into this to explore some of these ideas that could help lead to the oceans taking up more CO2. And so that's the opposite of what our study found will occur naturally. As this deep overturning circulation slows down, what we found is the oceans take up less CO2. And so we looked across a whole suite of climate models, 36 models, and we looked at different warming scenarios. From the most optimistic, we keep climate at 1.5 to 2 degrees in line with the Paris Climate Treaty, all the way to the worst case scenario, where we just keep burning up our fossil fuels, as we have been. And the worst-case scenario, what's really alarming in this study, is that southern overturning circulation, the SMOC, it appears to shut down completely in all the models by 2300. In the models we looked at, the AMOC doesn't shut down completely, but it's reduced by more than 80%, so it's really slowed down a lot.
And somehow, in that loss of carbon capture by the ocean and ocean life, it looks like in your paper, Earth would go over 1,900 parts per million instead of the 417 parts per million of carbon dioxide we have now. How is that possible?
So getting close to 2,000 ppm, which could happen, that's where we could end up if we burn up all the available fossil fuels, if we don't kick our fossil fuel habit. And the amount of global warming that comes with that is really incredible. So, you know, to date, we've had a little over 1 degree of climate warming. If we permit the CO2 to go as high as, you know, 1,900, 2,000 ppm, then we could see 10 degrees of surface air temperature warming. So 10 times the warming we've seen to this point. And, you know, it already feels like the climate system is going a little nuts with increasing fires, increasing flooding. You know, it's hard for us to even imagine what the planet would be like if we had 10 times that amount of warming.
It's interesting you should say that, because James Hansen has a paper out for review right now where he's talking about 10 degrees C of warming being possible, and it sounds outlandish, and yet that is what would happen if we burn it all. I'm hoping we don't burn it all. So meanwhile, scientists expect ice sheets on Greenland and Antarctica should take centuries to melt away. Could big changes in ocean life happen fairly quickly? Is there a tipping point where we lose the food fisheries in that carbon capture facility?
Well, I think the tipping point would be if things get hard enough that we get a complete shutdown of that deeper cell. And, you know, maybe the good news from our study is that only happens on the high-end worst-case warming. If we act now, over the next decade, couple of decades, to reduce our CO2 emissions, then in those more moderate future climate scenarios, AMOC and SMOC slow down, but only, you know, 30% or so. They don't shut off, and which would be much more drastic and disastrous for marine ecosystems. Because when it shuts off, that you really accelerate that nutrient trapping in the deep ocean. And that's also where the stuff that is sinking down and decomposing and consuming oxygen, there's a potential that it could consume all the oxygen in the deep ocean, which would then lead to a mass extinction event. And this has happened in the deep past before. And it happens when essentially the deep circulation shuts off for some extended period of time, but hundreds of years, maybe thousands of years. That's part of the problem, is we don't really know, especially as we go out to the multi-century time scale. You know, we're still figuring out where the tipping points are, and most of our climate simulations still end at 2100. So we're not really exploring this longer time frame the way I would like to see it explored in both the climate models, the Earth system models.
Suppose by the 2100 humans manage to stop emitting more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. Will plankton productivity which produces most of the oxygen we breathe, will it return back to what we have now?
It would likely be down some, but not catastrophically so. There would still be a lot of oxygen and a lot of photosynthesis, a lot of oxygen being released from the oceans to the atmosphere. So I'm less concerned about that danger. There'll always be some life and photosynthesis happening in the ocean. It's just comes down to how much it declines from the present day, and then, as you're implying, in the long run, how well can it recover? And to some extent, we need to just explore those timescales, those longer timescales, more with our Earth system models. It's hard to say what will happen in the long term. Same for this shutdown of the overturning circulation. You know, it's hard to see how that turns back on eventually. It could take a long time, hundreds to even thousands of years. When you shut down the deep ocean, you're also reducing the uptake of CO2 from the atmosphere when you shut down this deep circulation. This is what we found in the new study. And so that will extend the hot climate conditions, because in the long run, we're counting on the oceans to remove most of the CO2 we're adding to the atmosphere. And so to the extent that you weaken that, you prolong the peak warmth, hothouse conditions, perhaps for hundreds, even to a couple thousand years, depending on what happens with the deep circulation.
Keith, your work sounds obscure, but really it's very intense. If we continue warming the world, would you say this catastrophe in the ocean is just a possibility or a probability? How certain is the science at this point?
I think the science is very good that global warming will slow down this overturning circulation. It's an open question exactly how much, but, you know, because you're warming the surface waters everywhere, you know, warm waters are less dense, so that makes it harder to form these deep waters in the polar regions. And seeing that the salinity is also going the wrong way, as those big ice sheets start to really melt quickly, and that's, you know, something that's begun, they're going to be putting a lot of fresh water into the ocean, and salty ocean water is much denser than the fresh water coming in from the glaciers. So again, that'll make it harder to form the deep water, the really dense water that can sink all the way to the bottom and form that Antarctic bottom water, because the surface waters just get so, warmer and fresher, and at some point they can't get dense enough to sink to the bottom, and that's what is shutting off the SMOC in the long term.
Is this new knowledge of ocean currents and life being used by the IPCC?
Yes. So the models that we looked at were sort of the latest round of the IPCC simulations. So these are the state-of-the-art Earth system models, and the results from our study and others analyzing the output from all these climate models will then feed into the next IPCC assessment.
You know, I find it a little frustrating that your work over the last few years explains the possibility of a mass extinction level event due to tiny ocean life, but both your papers are behind a publisher's paywall. It's a mixed-up world when life could be threatened by changes under the surface, but nobody can afford to let the public read about it. What can be done about that? Any ideas?
I don't know. It is a problem. You know, we had the option to make this an open access paper, but we had to pay, I think it was $10,000. I didn't have $10,000. And, you know, the agencies like the National Science Foundation, et cetera, that fund my research, they don't really want to pay that $10,000 either. So I can't charge it to my grants. But I agree it is a problem. And I think, you know, all this scientific information should be freely available.
Well, especially when it has so much import, maybe we'll do a GoFundMe page to get some key papers up available to everyone. Well, meanwhile, what is next for you, Keith? What are you working on?
Well, I want to, you know, continue to look at these longer multi-century timescales and try to improve the model's ability to accurately make projections on those timescales. And so a big part of that is the interactions between the ocean and the ice sheet. That's one area where the models need to be improved, and I'm hoping to, you know, help work on that. As the oceans warm, the glacier flow off of Antarctica and Greenland can speed up dramatically as the big ice shelves break up, the ones that extend out over the ocean where the glaciers are flowing into the ocean. So there's a tight link there between the melting of the ice sheets and what's happening in the oceans. And in most of the climate models, this is captured still rather crudely. And we need higher resolution in those regions in particular that can better capture the ice sheet ocean interactions, because that'll have a big impact on the future of the climate, the future of the ice sheets, and the future of the planet, really.
Would you like to add any last words for our listeners?
Maybe just to say that this, you know, complete shutdown is... the deep circulation is quite scary, but what we found is that only happens on the worst-case climate scenario going forwards. We still have time to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions in the next couple of decades and avoid this shutdown of the deep ocean circulation. At least that's what the models are telling us right now. So it's not all bad news, and there is still time for humanity to avoid the worst impacts of global warming. But we have to act now. Time is getting short. And it's really going to come down to this generation. We're either going to save the planet by reducing the emissions and bending that curve, or we're going to be remembered as the generation that blew our last chance to save the planet. And I hope that's not the route we choose.
From the University of California, Irvine, we've been speaking with oceanographer Dr. Keith Moore. You can find links to all the science we talked about and more in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Keith, thank you for talking with our listeners.
Thank you. Thank you for your interest.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.